Blog Talk Radio.
Look, if you had one shot, one opportunity.
Hold on a second. Something's not working right, as usual.
You figure 4 years in, we'd have this straight.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Ah, come inside.
Behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Now, I'm not really sure if we ever have to pay royalties to those guys. We might have to look into that. But we definitely don't have to pay royalties to Football 52 Lose Yourself, because we don't even want that on our show. But it seems like we get it every single week.
Our show now begins with 9 seconds of Eminem, followed by about a minute of, I think, what is this, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, or whoever the heck plays this.
No, you're right. It was Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Spot on.
There you go. So, welcome to the show, everybody. Seth and Sean Sports Radio, Blog Talk Radio, on the Back Sports Page Radio Network, although we don't really have a Back Sports Page right now, but that'll come back soon enough. Not the most exciting sports week, I think, that we've had in recent times. But it'll be interesting. I'm assuming Mbonte Riles, host of So Much to Talk About on Manhattan News Network, been on a variety of shows, been on this radio show many times in the past, is coming on, I believe, at 7:30 to talk boxing?
Correct.
So, as of the two of us, the resident boxing expert, and Mbonte hosted a show on Sirius about boxing with Teddy Atlas and Wally Matthews. Is this in regards to the drug issue with Alexander Povetkin?
It is. Look at that. It is. It is about where boxing is going. Trust me, I do not want to hear 15 minutes on Floyd Mayweather ever again. I mean, there is no bigger fan of Floyd Mayweather than Mr. Mbonte Riles. But why I'm bringing him on is I would like to know how his opinion on how prevalent drug use is in boxing, the concept of where boxing is to go from here, given what happened this past weekend, and so on and so forth. So there was an issue in boxing this past weekend where a title bout is no longer going to be happening due to a failed drug test, which, believe it or not, I think it's the first time for a heavyweight that that's ever happened. So I'd like his opinion. I know you enjoy talking boxing, and I know it is a slow week in the eyes of the sporting world. So why not bring our favorite boxing aficionado on and talk with you so he doesn't have to argue with me?
Well, let me ask a question. Have you discussed with him that we're not talking Floyd Mayweather?
I have not, but I will make that abundantly clear at the beginning of our
conversation. Oh, you got a problem. Oh, because he's not coming on to talk about – now, Mbonte is extraordinarily knowledgeable. If he's going to be talking boxing, it is almost impossible to have a discussion with him that does not involve Floyd Mayweather.
Well, I'm telling this right now. So I am informing him of this as we speak. So I will take it to see whether he will join us anyway regarding – my text to him will be, you do realize there is no Mayweather. We are discussing drugs in boxing.
But forgetting even going into the boxing, on 60 Minutes this past week, they did an expose actually on the Russian doping at the Sochi Winter Olympics.
Correct.
And how the doping was, and now the entire in November the entire Russian track and field team was suspended because of its culture. Maria Sharapova, probably the most popular or second most popular female tennis player in the world, was suspended for drug use. It's all the same kind of thing.
And the irony behind this, Seth, the irony behind this is the drug that most of these Russians are being caught with is something that was allowed until January. So it was by WADA, which is the testing agency of the Olympics and so on and so forth, the International Olympic Committee. This drug, and I don't recall the name of it, I will get it in a second, was allowed.
It's Millennium.
Millennium, there you go. Was allowed on the international scene only until this January.
Well, that was the Sharapova drug and the Povotkin drug. I'm not sure
Hold on. I just got a text on Mr. Navarro's, and what he said was, "So you think that's all I know, Floyd Mayweather? Okay."
Oh boy, no, it's not all that you know, but it's what you love to discuss. So anyway, he's a little sensitive, but anyway, no, but these were what was found on the expose was that they were discussing the cheating in 2014, and so obviously those drugs, the Millennium that we're talking about, that Sharapova and Povetkin were utilizing, has nothing to do with that, because
correct.
In the winter in 14, whatever anabolic steroid that they were on was obviously illegal at that point. The argument that both Sharapova and Povetkin have been using is that they took this drug in September, October, whatever it may have been, prior to, and the residual is what got caught on the drug test.
Right, because they never get caught on any of the other drug tests that they've taken between September and now, or January and now. It just happened to be on one out of 20 drug tests. But you know what? Let's keep this until Nabate joins us, because we can make this a bigger discussion. I'd like to start first on game one of the Western Conference Finals. Are you surprised, A, that Oklahoma City is even there, and B, at the ease in which they dispatched the Spurs? Because to me, that was quite easy for them.
Well, I think anyone who says they're not surprised that Oklahoma City went and beat a 67-win team in San Antonio would be lying. I think this is a team that went 40-1 at home this season, and Oklahoma City beat them twice. Now, what I did say, and I think I said this last week,
I was just about to give you the props. So go ahead.
Yeah. You saw the momentum change after game four. And going into game six, I was pretty comfortable with the fact I thought that Oklahoma was going to win. I did not think they would be up 30 in the second half. But credit to San Antonio, who cut it to 11 or with about 5 minutes to go. And really, you could feel the uneasiness in, and I forget the Oklahoma City arena, the name, but it does lead to a very, very interesting series in my mind between Golden State and Oklahoma City.
So if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846. And like I said last week, we were going to try and give a little bit of a rundown concept, because we're preparing for our show on June 7th, dealing with a lot of the New York Giants and a couple of the Jets. So that's Tuesday, June 7th. So I did say we would have a more scripted version of today's show. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the NBA playoffs probably for another 10 minutes. Cut over to the NHL playoffs for 10 minutes before Mr. Owls joins. We'll talk about 15 minutes about boxing and anything else that Mr. Owls would like to brief us on in his glorious knowledge. And then we'll finish up with a little recap on baseball and whatnot. So feel free to give us a call. 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. And again, Nabate joins us at 7:30, so call in with your questions then. Is this the end of San Antonio as far as what we know of them, or do you see Duncan and Ginobili coming back?
I think they come back. I don't see a reason. You know, you leave because you want to retire. They don't need the money. They don't need the fame. They don't need the championships or anything. You know what, though? They love playing basketball. And they still can play it, albeit in more of a supporting role than anything else. But they can play it at a level where they can help a team win a championship. This was the second best team in the NBA this year by a pretty significant margin. And losing, now, could they use some youth? Yeah. Could they probably use a little bit more athleticism? Tony Parker is certainly not what he was. But I don't see, you retire. You know, we always talk about this. We talked about this with Jordan, and we talked about this with a lot of other players, that it's time for them to retire. And I've kind of changed my mind on this. You know what? They have the right to keep playing as long as they want. So enjoy it. So if you still enjoy it, why give it up?
Well, just to give you a little background on where their salaries are for next year, 2016-2017, right now, both Duncan and Ginobili have player options. Duncan for $5.5 million, Ginobili for $2.9. They can opt out of those and re-sign with no problem. David West has the same thing with a $1.5 million option. I see West opting out and getting some more money. I think he'll opt out and get more money from San Antonio, but I think he opts out and gets more. Collectively, they have $62 million in the cap. I believe the cap is about $90 million next year, so that is without those player options. So they have about $30 million to play with, given the re-signing of Duncan and Ginobili. And they lose Matt Bonner, Rashaal Butler, Boban Marjanovic, who they will have to re-sign, Ray McCallum, and Jimmer Fredette, a bunch of other low-level players. So how does LaMarcus Aldridge not have a contract for next year? Huh.
That's
got to be wrong.
He signed a four-year, $90 million deal.
Yeah. So that means they probably I'm sorry, I'm using Hoops Hype as my source. So they probably have another 19 on there. So if there's another 19 on there, they probably have $10 million to play with. Now, could they make a run at another high-level free agent such as Kevin Durant? It's possible. Look, they could clear out the money. That's not generally their MO, but then again, LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't their MO either last year. I'm going to go look up Aldridge's contract. It seems to be a little bit off the tilt here.
Yeah, Busy said, you look at this team, they're not overwhelmed. You know, you have your building blocks for the next generation with Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard. Danny Green is still pretty young, although he had a terrible playoff. They will have some room to make a run at some potential free agents. Again, I don't see, you know, I've heard the rumors of Durant. I don't see it. It doesn't as much respect as it maybe to teams. I just don't see him jumping to a team where his position is already taken for all intents and purposes, and it just doesn't seem to make a heck of a lot of sense. Like, you think Durant will resign, even if it's a two-year contract with the second year being a player option, where him and Westbrook can then each go free agent if they choose, because Westbrook, I believe, is an unrestricted free agent after this year. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. If he is re-signing with Oklahoma, I assume he'll do it immediately to avoid the hounds and hounds of press coverage that's going to inevitably come in.
Agreed.
But
we'll see
how it plays out.
Just to bring you up to date, LaMarcus Aldridge is on the books for $20 million next year. Tim Duncan can re-sign over the cap. Manu Ginobili cannot. I don't know why that is, but he cannot. So maybe because it was only a one-year deal instead of a two-year originally. So they have, if the cap next year is $92 million, which it's approximating, they have $84 million in active contracts. That's with both Duncan and Ginobili on the books and David West. They have $5 million in cap holds for their unsigned free agents, so they're at the cap. once Duncan.
Then it brings up a natural confusion of then how are there rumors going about that they will go after Kevin Durant with so little power.
Well, you can make this happen. So here's how you make it happen. Okay. You let go. Boris Diaw opts out. That's $6.5 million. Tim Duncan opts out. That's $5.6 million. That's $11 million right there. Ginobili opts out. Well, Ginobili can and can't, but let's say he can. That's $3 million. So that's $14 million. You trade Danny Green. That's $10 million. By the way, you just opened up $24 million. Once that happens, you can then re-sign both Diaw and Duncan for over the cap, since they have Larry Bird rights, and you can go over the cap for those two players. So if Durant was willing to start at $24 million, which I believe is about where he needs to start, you can make the room. You would have to find a taker for Danny Green and his $10 million salary, which, quite frankly, I don't think would be all that difficult to do.
Probably not in regards to how big the salary cap is going to be in a few years, but this year. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. More relevantly for now, though, how do you see this series playing out?
Hold on one second. If you were going to tell the New York Knicks that you can get Danny Green and the Spurs second round pick for a second-round pick from the Knicks, you don't think the Knicks would do that? So basically they get Danny Green for free?
Of course they would. The question is, and again, I don't know the Knicks' salary structure right now, but don't you still are you under the impression Aaron Aflalo opts out? Because I think he had a two-year $16 million deal with a player option.
Seth, I'm not saying this from a Knicks point of view. I'm saying this from a league point of view. If you're telling,
yes, of course you take.
Put this for the Bulls. Put this for anybody. If you're going to give them a sweetener of a second round pick with it, so the Spurs are going to go a second round pick and Danny Green for a conditional second round pick, which would never occur. You're basically getting a second round pick and Danny Green for free. You would do it.
The ironic part about that is though. The team that would fit best would actually – that you would be taking Kevin Durant from.
Absolutely.
Because there's one thing I think Oklahoma needs. You know, they're two big guys. Cantor and Adams have been phenomenal in this series. You have the two superstars. You have decent point guard and a little bit of depth. Waiters has been pretty good, and Cameron Payne has been decent when he played. You need that third option, the 3-and-D guy who can shoot three-pointers, because as good as Westbrook is, he is not a good three-point shooter. And Danny Green fits that to a team.
Agreed. Yeah, the two teams that would need him would be the two teams that are in contention, which I believe the Clippers would be the other one that would need him as well, and they're capped out as well. My point was, if the Spurs had a chance at Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant said, I would start at $24 million, you were asking what kind of gymnastics they'd need to do with the salary cap. It can be done. It can quite easily be done. If Durant wanted it to happen, all you're doing is basically sacrificing maybe David West and Danny Green. I think that's a no-brainer. So, saying who's going to win this series, look, I picked Oklahoma City, I believe, at the beginning of the year to make it to the finals. I believe I picked Oklahoma City and Cleveland to make it to the finals. If I want to pick with my heart, I'm sticking with my prediction. As long as Stephen Curry is healthy, I don't think Golden State loses this series.
Well, considering what the last two games of the Portland series, and props to Portland for really putting on a heck of a performance in the playoffs against both the Clippers and in defeat against I just completely lost my train of thought. Excuse me. Curry should have had time to recover. No reason to think, you know, he looked great, obviously, in game 4 and 5. No reason to think he would be anything less after another 4 or 5 days off. I like Golden State barely. I think I like them in seven. And I'm really torn on this because I think if Oklahoma plays to their potential, which is obviously a big if, they have the big guys that can bother. They can go big in athletic with – well, Cantor isn't really athletic, but Adams is. They do have two of the three best scorers in the league. And people, you know, we've all slept on Oklahoma City a little bit this year because of what's gone, the craziness that's gone on in Cleveland, and of course the record setting years in both San Antonio. And it's rare that a 60 win team goes under the radar as much as these guys did. I do think at the end of the day, Golden State is probably a little bit too good, but I would not be surprised in the slightest to see Oklahoma pull this off.
All right, so let's make a quick prediction on the other side, where we have Toronto facing off against Cleveland. I think if Toronto
pain.
Was healthy, I'm sorry?
A lot of pain.
A lot of
to
what?
Pain. To quote Mr. T or Clever Lang in Rocky III, I see a lot of pain.
Yeah.
If Jonas was healthy, that gives them probably another game. I think Cleveland in five.
I think if Jonas is healthy, this could be a very good series. I mean, a really good series. But because he's not, I would agree with you. I think it is going to be them in five as well. So 10 minutes until Mr. Nabate. So I said that we would switch to the NHL, and I think that that's the good place to go right now. Washington losing to Pittsburgh. Washington once again not being able to do what they had planned on doing, being the number one seed, losing in a 4-2, and now Pittsburgh is down to Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay loses Big Ben, Ben Bishop. So do you see Tampa Bay behind a rookie goalie, or second-year goalie, taking three more from the Penguins and making it to the Stanley Cup Finals? By the way, my predictions in the NHL playoffs, totally gone. Everybody gone.
So that's why you had the Blues.
Oh, maybe I did. You mean at the beginning of the season? Yeah. I might have had the Blues.
At the beginning of the season, I think you had the Blues.
Wow.
And the Caps, if
yeah,
I remember it correctly.
Yeah,
well, I think that's actually what's even more impressive is I remembered that.
It is.
Look, the Lightning, you know, Stamkos is out. They recover. They had one or two other big injuries. They just still keep on going. Am I a little hesitant now? I don't know how – you would know better than I would. How long are they expecting Bishop to be out for?
Here's the thing about hockey injuries. They don't really tell you anything. So they are not obliged to say whether day-to-day means the rest of the series. He has a knee injury. He has a sprained ligament. That could be one game. That could be four games. There's no real determining factor into that. You just don't know.
Now, I'm going to stick with this. I mean, the Lightning seem to have just gone on without them all. They've overcome adversity before. You know, Pittsburgh, for as much playoff experience as they have never really seemed to show the mental toughness that you would assume from a team that's been this deep so many times. I'm going to stick with Tampa.
I would agree with you. It looks like we might have Nabate a little early. You're on with Seth and Sean.
Hello. How's everything
Hello.
Going, guys?
It is.
I'm just really hungry, so I wanted to call you early.
It is. It is the prognosticator of all prognosticators, the dishing and swishing. No, that's Walt Frazier. Forget it.
Are you trying to call Frazier?
It is the Mayweather manager. Ladies and gentlemen.
Mayweather manager? Okay.
Well, you support Floyd Mayweather more than any person, probably including his manager and his mother. So,
in the boxing
Sean,
ring,
Sean,
like,
Sean,
what is
okay.
he proving? Everything, he's proven everything. But anyway, let's just keep going. I mean, like,
I really just wanted to get you on board
Sean,
with Seth.
Yeah. Sean, really. The idea is that was not the goal. Good to have Mr. Isles on, as always. The reason to talk boxing, and I think right now is in a time where boxing is taking a step back, a huge step back with the retirement of Mayweather, the probable retirement of Pacquiao, or at least the diminishment in popularity due to what's happening. And now you have a heavyweight title fight. Deontay Wilder, Alexander Povetkin, canceled 5 days prior to the fight in Russia due to drug abuse. Or due not to drug abuse, but due to the finding of the doping. You know, what is your, you know, you know Teddy Atlas well, who I believe trained Povetkin at one point. You know, what is your feeling on that? I mean, you hosted a very successful and a great boxing show, one of the best on the radio, on Sirius with Teddy Atlas and Molly Matthews. How prevalent is the doping in heavyweight boxing in boxing as a whole right now?
You know, it's interesting because and remember Mike Tyson confessed in his autobiography around 3 years ago when it came out. He confessed that he was on drugs. He was on marijuana, cocaine, and, you know, like different drugs while he was in the ring for big fights. And he was able to avoid, he just knew when the testing was coming, like AKA the piss man, you know, for lack of a better term, you know. He knew when he was getting tested. So he supposedly had like a fake penis with like urine, clean urine that he would use while going to the bathroom and then using that. It's just unbelievable the stories you hear, not just in boxing, but in football, you know, how people know how to avoid drug testing and do very, very unhealthy things to be able to avoid avoid positive tests. But with boxing, it's been a problem. There's no national commission like my good friend Teddy Atlas has always advocated for, that there needs to be a national commission. Every sports franchise, like every sports league, excuse me, has a commission. You have the four major sports. You have the ATP. You have the WTA in tennis. You have the PGA in golf. You have NASCAR in auto racing and IndyCar. Like every sport, every overwhelming popularity has a commission. But boxing, and even the MMA has a commission. They have a league, you know, things like that. They have different leagues. So it's just ridiculous how boxing, one of the first great sports in the world, you know, not just in America, but in Europe and, you know, everywhere, Europe and even Asia and South America. I mean, boxing, but Europe, it was really popular in the late 19th century, of course, in Europe and then in the U.S., but boxing is one of the great universal sports, but it's still set in its old ways. It's still set in the ways of being able to take advantage of fighters, but also, too, being set in its ways by having no type of accountability for any type of ill things going on by fighters or by promoters or by managers, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a problem where there's no commission. There's no athletic commission from the standpoint of, like, each of the states that really uphold any type of integrity. Because, you know, let me say most of the state commissions. Let me not say all of them. The New York State Athletic Commission has the most integrity pretty much around because they're headed up by the great David Berlin and Tom Hoover, who are great friends of Teddy Atlas, you know. So those guys have been changing things around with the NYSAC. So Melvina Lathan did a good job with the NYSAC beforehand. But this is a situation now, Seth and Sean, where, you know, it's just going to continue to happen. It's going to continue to have no type of organization. It's going to continue to be like AKA the Wild Wild West, where anything can happen and everything can happen, and there's nothing done about it. So it's kind of like insanity. You know, the same things that happen over and over and over again, and that's the insane world of professional boxing.
Well, can you make the case, Nabate, in the fact that because there are so many different titles and there are so many different weight classes, that there is no overarching, not only commission, but no overarching body, right? You have your WBC, you have numerous different titles, and I've said this for years, you have your uniform IBF, blah, 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 go on. You have three different titles for every weight class that you have. It's almost impossible to have an overarching body of everything.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that, because it's impossible to have those differing sanctioning bodies to be under one unified law. And it's so funny, quote and Teddy, you have the WBC, We Be Collecting. WBA, We Be Asking. The IBF, I Be Felonious. And the WBO, which is like some type of body odor. So we said that all along. Teddy created that on our show, actually. You know, and but that's the problem, Sean, is that's a major issue. And it's just what we need is just a national commission, I think, in the U.S. Any type of fights that are going on in the U.S., to have an organized national commission where all of the sanctioning bodies have to follow what is going on, the rules of the commission. They have to follow those rules. It's plain and simple. If the U.S. could set the tone and be able to create something with the government and be able to create something, then the rest of the world could follow. But
well, you just,
will that happen? No.
Nabati, you just made the point. You need government oversight. And the government has been very wary of getting involved in sports to begin with. Now, granted, you look at the steroids problem that they had in the congressional hearings that they had for baseball, and it did actually bring about legislation for baseball. But other than that, the federal government has been very wary of getting involved not only in private business, but specifically sports.
Yeah, it's and the government shouldn't be involved, which that's the double. It's like, for me, it's like I'm going back and forth with a pendulum. The government shouldn't be involved, but then I'll say they should be involved, you know, just to be able to start something that's legitimate. But also, too, as we all know, with there's not everything's legitimate with the government itself. So, what is the example that's being set? None. Nada. Zero.
Let me ask you a question. You brought up the different boxing organizations, but even more powerful than the organizations are the promoters, the Al Heyman, the Golden Boy, the Bob, the De La Hoya, Bob Arum.
Al Heyman is a manager, not a promoter. He's a manager.
For all intents and purposes, he's the most powerful man in boxing.
Absolutely.
I don't think anyone disputes that. So you want to call him manager, promoter, whatever title you want to use. You can't. The problem I would see is you have to get all of these guys on the same wavelength. And I don't even know how you would start with that. Forgetting the belts. Nobody really cares about the inter. Because, again, you have three titles at every weight class. You have the real one. You have the in. There's always an interim one. And there's like an emeritus one. You have 12. You have, for all intents and purposes, nobody gives a flying beep about the junior lightweight, IBF junior lightweight champion.
And Seth, to piggyback on your point, I have to say it's good now in boxing. You notice when ESPN covers boxing, they don't really mention the sanctioning body titles no more. They'll say a titleist. You know, now you have the middleweight champion of the world in Canelo Alvarez. You have the welterweight champion of the world in, it was Floyd Mayweather. Now you have the different, which I think the winner of Thurman Porter is the true welterweight champion of the world, the winner of that fight.
But
it's
going to
be in the
Brook
eyes
too.
Of the real. Huh?
Right. You can argue Kell Brook.
Oh,
if Porter wins,
yeah,
and Brook, if Porter wins, Kell Brook is the only guy who's beaten Porter. So I don't – there's very few. That's why I like the ring ratings so much, or even Dan Raphael ratings, not because they per se have a value, but it gives you an idea, okay, this is legit. You know,
but
nobody
but
knows
Brook,
who
has to. Kell Brook has to fight someone. That's the thing, other than
well,
he beat Sean Porter.
Agree. Absolutely
right, okay.
Agree.
Yeah, yeah. So – But like you're saying, just about now, like, a lot of people are starting to recognize one champion in each weight class now, which is a good thing. But I think, you know, how many fighters we've heard that tested positive and it hasn't been mentioned, you know, throughout the history of this sport, especially over the past 20 years, you know, like so many people that tested positive, you know, Shane Mosley with the Balco controversy, you know, Roy Jones, it was said that he tested positive on a, you know, at a drug test, for HGH or performance or PEDs. So, I don't know how we can solve it.
Nabate, you can only deal with what is today. Now, I'm the first person to say, you know what, I hate the fact that there were greenies in baseball and that steroids were prevalent throughout the 90s. I'm the first person to say I hate the fact that all that happened. But it happened. And that's what history dictates. It happened. You can only correct...
speed in the 80s. Amphetamines in the 80s.
Okay,
big
so
time.
My point is you can only start today. So what do we do today? Not, I don't, I care what Shane Mosley did, but there's nothing I can do about it. So what do I do today?
I would say this is the best thing to do. Have unified rules between all of the state athletic commissions, something that's unified all the way around when it comes to the sport, because you have all these fights taking place in different states. I would say have each, but you can't have everyone be unified. You know, when it comes to the rules of the fights, like, you know, no standing eight count, three knockdown rule, you know, like there's some states that have, you know, of course, when the actual competitive rules, it can vary. But I think when it comes to drug testing, when it comes to promoters from this, being able to look at the greater interest of the fighters and of the venue and of the event, I think there needs to be – I think each of the state athletic commissions need to have a unified – just a few unified rules, but especially with drug testing. I think that's the first thing to strike, and that can work. But you need the government to be involved, the federal government. I don't know if that's going to happen. Or maybe have, like, major enterprise, major – you know, the sponsors be involved in this. Have the sponsors force their hand on them to say, listen – you have to be able to make the, you have to be able to have drug rules and testing, or even get advice from the Olympic Commission and stuff like that, which isn't the greatest, but it's just, you know, like they need someone that's funding these events, major sponsors that are funding these events, to just force them and push them to be able to organize something that's legitimate and make the sport whole again.
Well, I think you just pointed it out.
Well, not whole again. It's never been whole. Sorry about that.
Nabate, I think you just pointed out, you need the people that have the purse strings. Because if you don't, and people are still making money, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't. So until the people pull out their money or people stop going to boxing fights, which we both know does not happen, that's exactly the case it will be. I mean, the only reason that baseball had congressional hearings in the first place was because enough people saw what happened with Mark McGwire, saw what happened with Alex Rodriguez and Sammy Sosa, and said he was a fraud. That's it.
Yeah.
And they made an issue about it. And sponsors got rid of it. But, that's it.
Well, but here's another question. You know, the thing with baseball was, yes, it had diminished because of everything that happened, but it wasn't like there was a comparable sport that was overtaking it. Cricket wasn't coming in and taking baseball's market share. Obviously, MMA, although it's had a pretty rough year or two, with Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey, has overtaken boxing's market share. To a degree. They're now bigger worldwide than boxing is. Even if these changes take place, does boxing have any prayer of ever returning to the upper echelon of sports? Because it's not. It's a second tier sport right now.
It definitely has a chance. It's about the way it's marketed. It's about putting the best against the best. I think boxing could absolutely be a first-tier sport within the next 3 years if it's marketed right and you have the best fight and the best. And also, if you market the young amateurs coming up, just like you market the college basketball, college football athletes, those amateur athletes, and everything like that, and you know, just showing, like the Olympics, showing the talent that's out there, not just the American fighters, but the world fighters, because you have a lot of world fighters now that had Olympic success that have some popularity. So boxing, no, I think that's easy for the sport to be able to come back. I think the PBC has a great marketing plan, a great strategy, but not the greatest fight. And also, they're not, you know, also you don't know when the fights are coming on half the time too, you know. So
we could talk for an hour about the PBC. We could do an entire other show about the PBC. But, I mean, so, you know, Nabata, I appreciate you coming on. One last question before you roll.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one fight you want to see right now in boxing, is it the fight? What is it, and why?
I mean, you know what? As a boxing purist, I want to see Vasyl Lomachenko and Guillermo Rigondeaux. But of course, you know, the novice fan is not going to want to see that because that's
no.
Boxing,
watching
like
Rigondeaux, watching Rigondeaux is like watching Pete try.
Yeah, but when you know the sport, like, you know, we both know the sport.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to watch. The guy is skilled. You know what I mean? So and no one wants to fight him at the end of the day. But I think Lomachenko and Rigondeaux, that's what I really want to see. But for the fans, if I was just not a committed boxing fan, Canelo Alvarez and Triple G and Gennady Golovkin. I mean, that's a fight which will be fireworks and exciting. But as a boxing guy, I would still want to see that. But I would want to see Rigondeaux and Lomachenko. I would also want to see Andre Ward and also Triple D and Gennady Golovkin at 168, maybe, like a catchweight. But Ward's now 175. So, but anyway, those are the fights I would love to see. I think what else? And I want to see Roman Gonzalez get challenged. I would want to see him move up and get challenged. There are a couple of good bantamweights, not great. 115, there are a couple of good Japanese fighters.
You got Inoue, I believe, at 115.
Yeah, Inoue, exactly. If he can get healthy and fight consistently, that would be a major fight. And that, I'm telling you, if that was marketed right, then if that fight was marketed right, no question, people will want to see it. But no one knows who Inoue is, you know? So
that's part of the problem. Roman Gonzalez, the number one fighter in the world right now. And, you know, barely a name to him. Nabate, thank you, as always, for joining. We look forward to hearing
you
soon. You want to do a quick shout-out for your show?
Yes, my show has so much to talk about. MNN.org on the Spirit link for all you to see it nationally. Wednesday nights, 9 p.m., I'm showing interviews from the sports Emmys I conducted the last week. Interviews with Hannah Storm, with Shaquille O'Neal, with Calvin Hill, who's Grant Hill's father, Victor Cruz. A lot of great interviews. Vern Lundquist, the legendary broadcaster who was honored at the Emmys, at the sports Emmys last week. So interviews with those great. And so you can check me out Wednesday night, MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, which is M as in more, N as in no, N as in no.org, and just click on the Spirit link. Also in Manhattan, if you live in Manhattan, it's Time Warner 1997, that channel, RCN 84, and Verizon Fios 35. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Nabate. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. And I'm at Nabate Isles, S-N-T-A, N-A-B-A-T-E-I-S-L-E-S, S-N-T-A. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, see ya.
Well, that was a pretty good good exit. A good time to be using the beeper right there, Sean.
Thank you.
Nabate Isles, one of the most knowledgeable guys in boxing. And 20 minutes without really discussing Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, but I'd like to see if when we ask him the next time and get him on the show, which we always do, and we always do like Nabate, and I got to tell you, I love chiding with him because it's easy, because he and I are two very, very type A people, so it's very easy to get under each other's skins a little bit. I'd like to see him, when you ask him what is the one fight that he'd like to see, limit it to one fight that he'd like to see, not 20, because
yeah,
I just, no.
I understood his first, well, his idea is this. Guillermo Rigado is a technician, is a boxing technician. Vasily Lomachenko won a world title after his fifth fight, one of the most decorated amateurs in the world. The problem, you know, it would be a great fight. I don't think he would draw. The fight everyone wants to see is Canelo Alvarez, who, following the retirement of Mayweather in when we talked about Pacquiao, has become the biggest draw in the world, fighting, you know, and this is part of the problem, fighting Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, who is from Kazakhstan. It is the most popular boxer in the United States by a significant margin because of his personality and his knockout prowess. And it is a fight that we probably will see within a year. The problem we have, you know, and I disagree with him on certain things, although I respect his knowledge immensely, I don't see how it comes back to being a first-tier sport. I'm not sure it was a first. It's been a first-tier sport since the 80s when you had Sugar Ray fighting Tommy Hearns on ABC network television. You don't have a network TV deal. The PBC, which has been, for all intents and purposes, a disaster in a lot of people's minds, which is Premier Boxing Championships, which is Al Haymon trying to put everything together, so have to have supposedly the best fighters fight the best fighters, but that really isn't what's happened. So I don't know how it goes. I don't know how it could ever become a top-tier sport again. But, you know, look, all this stuff is cyclical. And if there is a charismatic, energetic, you know, self-promoting, likable American who can go out and win, you know, a title at a big weight, whether it probably heavyweight, be the necessity. You know, like, but I mean, Deontay Wilder is that, and he doesn't have much of a draw. So it's a very difficult thing. I disagree with you that it's just marketing. There's a lot of moving parts, and it's a sport that's diminished over the last 30 years, and I don't think you can bring it back that quick to the echelon that it once was at.
Look, bringing something back in 3 years, I don't care if what sport you are. It's incredibly difficult to get that type of market share in 3 years if you're baseball, basketball, football, or anything. It's just very, very hard. A cycle is not 3 years long. So I think you have many differences in bringing boxing back than you would basically any other sport, in the fact that all the repercussions that go on with health right now, and all the football, the movie on football and concussions, MMA in some states not being legitimatized because of the injuries that are happening. People
legitimized.
I'm sorry, legitimatized?
Legitimized, man.
Legitimized, there you go. I'm missing my spell check. I think the fact is, while it's exciting to the boxing fan, the casual person does not want to see people getting beat up by other people anymore. Not when you have many different alternatives that you probably did not have when boxing was at its peak in the 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Well, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you also didn't have football and basketball for all intents and purposes.
Agreed. Well, that's what I'm saying. So you didn't have alternatives. So, and in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you didn't have the medical science that you have today. In the 20s, 30s, and 40s, you were hoping that some guy who was really, really down on his luck would be able to fight his way out of it. These days, these guys are not those guys. Boxers are groomed. They're not the guy from the playground that could beat the crap out of somebody. It's just not the same. It's not the same. And I think we all understand that. Football's not the same. Basketball's not the same. Baseball's not the same. sports are not the same. You have many different alternatives. A three-year cycle, like Mr. Isles had indicated, I just think is unrealistic. I agree with you. Wholeheartedly agree. And that doesn't happen very often. So to bring us back to another sport, which is trying to rid itself of that stigma of we like to beat the crap out of each other, especially in the playoffs, the NHL, where we stopped before Mr. Isles came on with the Eastern Conference, and we must make our predictions for the Western Conference. St. Louis is against the Sharks. St. Louis is up 1-0. If I pick St. Louis at the beginning of the year, I may be a prognosticator of all prognosticators, so I will stick with St. Louis, who I think is one of the most underrated teams in the NHL. And they're one of the more no-name teams in the NHL, but riding some very good goaltending, which is what you need in the books.
Yeah, Brian Elliott has always been a solid goalie. But, you know, when you get through the West, you really need top-tier goaltending. He's given them that both in the initial series and again in the seven-gamer against Dallas, where they blew him out in Game 7, up a game, and they look good. And they're a team, at one point, I think they had set the record for most consecutive seasons going to the playoffs. It's been like 25 or 26 in a row. I don't think they ever even made they may have made one final during that period, or maybe not. I don't even remember during the 80s and 90s. I'm trying to think, did they make the finals against the Islanders at one point?
The Blues have never made the finals. Ever.
Okay. No, they did because they lost in, I think, their expansion year. They lost to the Boston Bruins because that's the famous Bobby Orr goal against Glenn Hall.
72?
Yeah, 69 I thought it was.
Well, I will look. You may be right. No, I may be crazy. So I'm looking that up right now. Anyway. Stanley Cup appearances. I will have to look into this because I do not know the answer to that question. In any event, so you think it's 69-70? I'm looking for their playoff Stanley Cup Finals 1970. You are correct. They played four games, and they lost all four games. So that is the last time. The Sharks have not been in the Stanley Cup Finals at all. They are the two teams that are basically always been a bridesmaid and never been a bride. I believe that they are two of the most underrated teams, but two of the more underachieving teams as well of the last 15 to 20 years, and one of them will be in the Stanley Cup Finals. So that would be an interesting sidebar for them. So are you picking the Blues as well, or are you going Sharks?
I'm picking the Blues as well.
Okay. So, I mean, let's assume that that this is over by the time that we pen our next show, which will be next week. And granted, in 2 weeks, Seth, Memorial Day, I will be unavailable for the show, so Seth will have a guest host of some indication, as I will be sitting on a beach, earning my...
Well, Seth is actually not going to be there next week. I'm on Baby Moon, so I will be in pretty but not too warm, thanks a million Zika virus, Portland, Maine for 3 days. So I will not be back until Monday, so I don't think I will be back in time for the show.
Okay. I will be handling next week with a guest host, and then the following week Seth will be handling it with a guest host as well, because I will not be around. So two guest hosts, two consecutive weeks. We'll announce those online when we get them. But it does give Seth 2 weeks to find somebody, while it only gives me 6.5 days. But I will do
so. No pressure.
I will survive. I will survive. So given that, you're picking Tampa Bay to face off against the Blues, and who are you picking to win that Stanley Cup Finals?
I'm going with the Blues.
Okay, I'm going with the Blues as well. and to be the prognosticator of all prognosticators. And then in the NBA, since you probably will not be here either, you are picking Golden State or Oklahoma
State? I'm going Golden State, Cleveland.
Golden State, Cleveland, and who shall win that?
I think it's going to be a repeat. I think it's going to be a heck of a series, but I like Golden State.
Okay. And I will try and go with my gut, which is what I did at the beginning of the year, and I'm going to stay with Oklahoma City. I'm going to pick Oklahoma City over Cleveland, which means Kevin Durant will likely stay in Oklahoma City, which would be the surprise of all surprises to me, because I don't think he stays, but if he wins, I think it's very hard for him to go. So we got 5 minutes left. Would you like to go first, sir?
I will start. You know, we were talking about, you know, about championships and talking. We don't talk much about mixed martial arts, but there is a new heavyweight champion, and there's a champion from Cleveland. So it just didn't happen to be the champion that people were expecting. And the bell rings as Stipe Miocic beats Fabricio Werdum in Brazil. And almost starting a riot down there with a one-punch knockout on Saturday night, which means in the 15 years of the UFC, I don't believe any heavyweight champion has ever held the belt for more than two, has ever defended it more than twice. So props to him. Props to Larry Fitzgerald and to Marcus Lattimore, both for getting their degrees. Larry Fitzgerald, 13 years after he leaves to go pro. One of the classiest and most intelligent individuals you've ever had the pleasure of listening to speak. And Marcus Lattimore, one of the all-time, everybody's favorite, one of everyone's favorite athletes, who unfortunately, because of injuries, was unable to become the pro that he would have been graduating from South Carolina. So props to both of them.
Absolutely correct. No question about it. We were talking about boxing today, and when you have boxing, you have uppercuts. And nobody this week had a better uppercut than Rogan Odor last night. Man, he certainly gave one to Jose Bautista. And the punch heard around the baseball world, Seth, I am sure you have seen this. Have you not?
I have.
Wow. I saw that, and I was kind of like, Joey Bats is going to go nuts. But truth be told, Joey Bats deserved it because that slide was way out of play, way late, and I don't think that – I might say he deserves a punch. Nobody deserves a punch. They certainly deserve to get thrown out of that game. The whole Chase Utley slide thing that happened to Ruben Tejada should have prevented that last night. I understand players policing themselves. And we've seen a whole lot of headhunting due to this and slides and punches and bench-clearing brawls. But at the end of the day, this has absolutely no place in the sport of baseball. You want to know why people stop watching baseball? It's because of crap like this. It really is. I understand, Seth, that it probably made it a little bit more exciting than watching grass grow for you in a baseball game or watching paint dry. But to me, this is absolutely no place in baseball and needs to be eradicated. So next week it'll be me. The week after it will be Seth, both the guest hosts. Thanks for joining Seth and Sean Sports Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks again. Have a great week.
Have a good one, everybody.